Hello, Channel Pros. What a great time of the year. Q1 is in the books. Spring is in full bloom and kickoffs are behind us. Now we're full on into partner and customer events going on. This week, I am in London for our Go Beyond event and our partner advisory board. This is what I really enjoy, getting out and meeting with our partners and our customers, mapping out how we can drive even greater value for both of them. How about you? Are you happy with the results of your partner program? Is your channel strategy driving the growth you expect? Classic channel programs and partnering strategies were meant to serve one purpose, really: drive more revenue for me. The world has changed, though. Focusing solely on more revenue for your company doesn't fly anymore with your partners or your customers. In this episode, I explore the art and science of building partnerships that drive enhanced customer value. Joining me today is Barrett King, Senior Director of Revenue at New Breed. Barrett worked at a partnering powerhouse, HubSpot, for 8.5 years before taking the leap to join their top partner. Today, you're going to learn key success factors, including the importance of collaboration, active listening to customers and your partners, and prioritizing meaningful relationships over traditional sales tactics in today's evolving market landscape. This is your clarion call, your call to arms, if you will, to embrace change, challenges, and opportunities that come with striving for excellence in channel partnerships. Welcome to the Channel Journeys podcast. I am Rob Spee, your cycling, sailing, and partner ecosystem fanatic and your host of Channel Journeys. Before we dive in with Barrett, I want to give a shout out to Impartner, the sponsor of Channel Journeys. Building a partner ecosystem requires a powerful partner management solution. With a global user base of over 4 million partners, Impartner is recognized as the global leading provider of partner management technologies. Their platform offers powerful capabilities like program compliance tracking, customizable partner journeys, and business planning that enables partner teams like yours to quickly move from program design to maximum time to value. One of the great things about Impartner is their partner ecosystem, and they're constantly innovating and launching new modules to help you engage your partner ecosystem. All right, are you ready to build partnerships that really drive value and growth? Let's go.
Welcome to Channel Journeys, the podcast for channel professionals that will enable and inspire you to create your best channel journey ever. Meet and learn from channel experts who share authentic stories of their channel victories, defeats, and lessons learned along the way. Here's your host, Rob Spee, a channel chief on a never-ending quest for channel knowledge and adventure.
All right. Hello, Barrett. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Channel Journeys podcast. How you doing?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me, Rob. I'm excited to chat, hang out today.
Yeah, likewise. And you're calling from your own podcast studio. Is that right?
I am. Yeah. I am just south of Boston by about 30 miles. But yeah, I am in my own studio right now.
So, and I think that's how we got connected, Barrett, was through my listening to your podcast, the Outcomes Podcast, which I love. I am a big fan.
Thank you. That's so nice to hear.
Yeah. Great work that you're doing there. And I love having other podcast hosts come on as guests as well, because we're fanatics. We are so passionate about partnering. So it makes for a fun conversation.
Yeah, something special about it. I think we both understand, perhaps in some ways, how to make this more interesting, I hope, and more insightful, I would aim for. But also, it's just enjoyable to talk to somebody who understands the space.
Yeah, well, I think I do. One thing you learn, though, podcasting, is you are constantly learning, right?
Every day. I think that's what makes it fun, though. That's why I do it, frankly. A big part of my motivation to start the show is wanting to learn. I want to learn from folks that had been there and done the work.
Exactly. It makes it so much more fun. So I know, listening to your podcast, you love kicking off with a question that I'm going to pose to you. So Barrett, what does partnering mean to you?
No one's asked me. I've been at this for like a year and a half. No one's ever asked in return. No, you're the first. You get credit. You get gold star. Partnerships. Yeah. There's this idea of like 1 + 1 = 3. I'm sure you've heard folks say it. I think you and I have said it to each other, certainly. When I think about, at its core, what partnering means, it is ultimately about the value triangle. You plus another organization, together, combined, deliver more value for your customer. And if you keep the customer at the nucleus of everything that you do, then your go-to-market should always be about making their experience, their value, their outcome better. And so when I think about partnering, it's very simply that. It's being intentional about working with other businesses and organizations, services, products, et cetera, that add value to the way that you deliver value now to your customer.
Yeah, I think that sums it up really well, but there is a lot behind that to make it work, right? And that's what we're going to explore today. I want to dive into that with you. Before we go there, you have an interesting background. You've done something that I actually did in my career too, jumping from vendor to partner. So you've gone, you were with HubSpot for what, 8 years?
Yeah, 8.5 years. Yeah, that's fresh. It's only been a few months here, but it is a very interesting experience.
So now you're with New Breed, running sales at New Breed?
I am, yeah. So I have this really awesome title, Senior Director of Revenue, which means, yeah, I'm a head of sales. And I've got an incredible team of advisors that are a part of the group that I get to work with. I have a sales engineer and some folks in partnerships. We've got a really well-rounded team, but ultimately it distills down to that. Yep.
What attracted you to make the leap?
You know, I think it's a few things in particular. So at face value, I would argue that it was somewhere between burnout and excitement, like two ends of the spectrum. I had been at HubSpot for 8.5 years, done a bunch of different things. And in many ways, I think checked the boxes that I intended to around experience and around diversity of exposure to go to market, right? I was the first head of sales training for partner. I had been in L&D. I had done the partner acquisition motion. I had managed top partners. I had sold. I had then managed a team of enterprise sellers. I had done go to market. I really, in some ways, I think built the happy meal, if you will, of life experience, my mini MBA throughout the time that I had at HubSpot. New Breed for me was a logical next step in particular, because when I thought about how I could take the experience I had, the background, the context, the knowledge, and step out of the framework of software and into the framework of something else that was secondary, a partner, obviously in this case, that was interesting. It was a different lens, a different perspective. I will say ultimately and fundamentally, it was a fantastic decision, not just because, and I will certainly sing New Breed's accolades all day, but even for myself, from a perspective basis, being able to look at the problem through a different lens, it is so different. All of a sudden now I have a really different approach, different insights, different experiences when I think about how that customer gets value from a software vendor. So for me, you know, to synthesize this, it was really this idea of taking all of my experiences, bringing them into something that was in many ways tangentially related. It was next door, if you will, but that had a new challenge, had a different perspective on the problem, and then I could go and do something really unique. I mean, New Breed's in a really cool place in their own journey in terms of an inflection point of growth, getting away from some of the foundational stuff, some of the early stage, you know, building, if you will, of their go-to-market of their organization. And now we're growing, you know, we're scaling, we're building process and things that allow us to deliver even more value to our customers over the long term. So it was a nice sort of transition in that sense.
Yeah, and I can totally appreciate the reasons, because I went through that myself. I made the leap like you did. And I think it's something that everyone in the partnering career should do. And you may end up back on the vendor side, but everything you are learning now is going to make you an even stronger partner chief, channel chief, whatever you want to call it, you know, having that experience. I jumped for the same reasons, a little bit of burnout, but also one thing I loved about being in the channel and running channels was I live vicariously through the partners, and I'm a bit of an entrepreneur at heart, and I love seeing what they're doing. I got kind of jealous. It's like, hey, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to go out and do that. So you're taking the right route, I think. I went the startup route and with a couple buddies and launched a company, and we were Splunk partners.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
When Splunk was just getting started, it was a ton of fun. It was hard as heck, you know, just starting a startup in the first place. But I really learned the value of partner programs, the downside of some partner programs, complexities, how you co-sell with reps and everything. Definitely gave me a much more appreciation for the struggles of a partner and the challenges of being a partner.
Makes you more effective. I mean, I think, and I appreciate your compliment, to your point around there's this lens of interpretation. So I've talked about this before in other shows. I will say it again. I think it's valuable here. I'm an analogies guy. So if you can picture that green mat that we all had when we had purchased a Lego set when we were kids, so like you built your house or your boat or whatever you had purchased on top of that green Lego mat, I think about that as the baseline for when you graduate primary education, college, bachelor's, doctorate, whatever it is, right? So primary education ends, you've got your green mat and you've got maybe a few bricks on there, some orange, some green, some blue, whatever. Some of us know what we're going to do because we decided early on we're going to be a doctor, lawyer, nurse, traditional, whatever it is. So we've got a stack, albeit short, but a stack of like colored and shaped blocks. We might have a couple orange, a couple blue, et cetera. The rest of us don't, right? The rest of us have a bunch of sort of a myriad of different colors and shapes, and they're stacked perhaps haphazardly around the mat. And then we go into our lives, and some of us figure out how to pick one and verticalize. Others, like myself, don't do that. I never chose a specific color or shape. I actually preferred not to. And I tried to diversify across the different types of Legos that I put on my mat. Somewhere about 5-6 years ago, maybe 10 years ago now, I figured out that I could reorganize those Legos into a more synthesized and in many ways, I think, streamlined storyline that would enable me to have a much more effective way of doing work. I could draw from experiences and stories, i.e. the colored bricks, but in doing so, I could translate into something more effective for the customer, for the employer, whatever that context was. When I figured out how much I liked go to market and in particular partnerships on the front end, then it was, all right, how do I take the bricks that I have and build a little bit higher? So less about diversity, more about perhaps in some ways depth and reach, the stability of each of those different components, which is why I did what I did in terms of the HubSpot experience, looking for different avenues to develop more bricks, but also deeper in terms of height and reach bricks. Now on this side, I've almost built this like bridge, if you will, between the, I think a pyramid is probably the shape that I had, a pyramid to this other shape, which is like I had proximity. I actually managed New Breed, the company that I work for now. I managed them as their partner manager at HubSpot like 6 years ago. So I had this perspective from way back when, if you will, that is, you know, in many ways been destroyed in the last 180 days or whatever it's been, you know, 60 days, 70 days, 90 days. I've been here for like forever because I thought I knew. I had no idea. And so to your point, Rob, I think there's something interesting about, you know, working for a provider like that for a very long time, a vendor that's got a software suite that has dynamic tools, and I can sing HubSpot's praises all day, but then you look at the value that these partners are delivering to the customer, and you start to recognize, with all due respect to HubSpot, that the software really isn't much unless you've got somebody really, you know, well honed in on doing the work in it, right? You can, at different tiers, certainly get different value, but if you think about the solutions partner, the provider side of it, all of a sudden I get to learn, to your point, in some ways, the entrepreneurial piece, but also how do we take this tool that we've been given and empower it to do a lot more? Like, how do we do things that deliver the 1+1=2 outcome for our customers? And that's what I've learned here in just, you know, my first couple months. It's been great.
You're cracking me up though with the Lego mat analogy. I've got that mat down in my basement in our storeroom. So
oh, look at that. There you go. You gotta put in a shelf behind you or something like that and build something. My son just got his first Lego set, so it's very topical for me. Yeah.
Yeah, I love building the villages and trees, little trees and everything. And yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. As you were describing that kind of as your career, it also applies to partnerships. You think about, you know, and we're kind of moving the pieces around too and trying to uncover what kind of partner pieces we have on the mat and how do you organize and structure that. All this talk about ecosystems.
I think it's easy to say things like ecosystem or community as a word. It's harder to build them into your go-to-market, into your business at an organizational level. And it comes from a place of, in some ways, I think perhaps honesty and need to be transparent. The companies that have done a good job in, and I don't think anyone's done a great job yet, to be clear. I'm gonna put that out there in the world. I'm gonna probably get some mean comments on LinkedIn, but I believe that. The people that have done a good job are the ones that listened really well in the beginning. So I think ecosystem and community as a whole is really about, it's about listening and it's about being intentional in the way that you push value through a series of people and businesses. And in some ways, I don't think I would describe it this way. I don't think any of us actually own, I'm doing bunny ears for those who can't see me, right? I don't think anyone actually owns the customer the way that they think they do. And when I think about ecosystem, I think about this next evolution, if you will, in terms of go-to-market. It's about the shared value, the moving around, if you will, of revenue and of dollars spent and of cost and whatnot. And the more we can recognize that this is a little bit of an organic thing, there is no balance. It's about blend. Blend in terms of the fact that it's going to be give, get, and someone does more and someone does less. And but at the end of the day, if we keep it about the customer, then we win. I think those pieces start to be more clear, more transparent. We need a little bit of this in terms of product or partner marketing. We need a little bit of this in terms of our integration. And those components start to surface when you are observant and in many ways a student of the problem as you go.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned earlier the customer. And so tell me about your view on that and how you execute that, where partnering really centers around the customer.
People ask me about, I think more often than not right now, how do I start a partner program? It's like a very broad question. Or where do I start with a partner program? I always say, go to your top 50 most receptive, most communicative customers, five, whatever, however many you can get to, right? Get your customers. You probably want to get as many as you can. So 15, 20, 30, critical mass. And ask them who else they work with. Just that simple. Who else do you work with? There's no preconceived notion. There's no expectation. It's literally who you work with. And what you'll find through those dialogues, you start to dig in, is that the people that work with your customer, they're usually one of two things. They're either adding value. And by, to be clear, I don't mean like if you provide service A that you like want to look for the person that like cleans their office. Like that's not a proximity-based service or proximity-based value. But what I mean is, like, there are businesses that are integrated with your systems. There are businesses that are delivering value on top of your technology, that are augmenting the services that you deliver to the customer and doing more with that outcome. Things like that, the proximity, the closeness, if you will. If you talk to those folks and you figure out that those are the ones that are in many ways the closest to your problem, then those are your early partnerships. When you start to realize that those are the potential partnerships, then the next thing you have to do is go and form your hypothesis, right? So the like high school stage of, you know, the scientific method, right? Like, what's our hypothesis? We have to run an experiment against it. The experiment is like, try and go to market together, try and do a few things together, but always make it about the customer. So where you see a lot of organizations back from the early and mid 2000s, even to today, to be frank, but maybe the last like 10, 15 years, talk of like channel and talk of like, it was always like resell. And it was about this transactional moment, not about ongoing value. The companies that got it right, I think HubSpot did for many years. I think Salesforce did early on. Amazon has at different stages, the big ones. And there's a ton of like thousands of littles, right? Are the ones that figured out that by working together, we get more value for our customer. And so why don't we make it about helping each other do more, do better, do faster, do deeper, whatever the correct adjective is here. That to me is the most insightful way to think about today, maximizing partner potential and being in a very clear mindset that the customer is the reason we're doing it. So I'll give you an example just because it helps to talk about this. So early HubSpot, I'll use them because we've been talking about them. Early HubSpot, they figured out, this guy Pete Caputa, super smart guy, figured out that some of the most successful customers of HubSpot's were working with marketing agencies. Why? Because HubSpot had a blogging tool and a social media tool and ads tool. And well, that's pretty straightforward. That's a hop, skip, and jump to say there's probably somebody who is blogging in that platform. And 9 times out of 10, if you're talking about SMB, which is where they started, those customers don't have a 15-person marketing team. They have a 1-person or a 2-person marketing team, right? Or 5 maybe.
That was me at my startup.
There you go. Yeah, you're the persona. You get it.
And I used HubSpot.
There you go. So you're doing the best you can on that platform and you're getting as much value as you can. And then maybe you figure out that an agency could help you more because they are experts in the space, do the work all day long, and you actually get a multiplier against your investment. Because for, I'll make it up, $5,000 a month, you get an SEO expert, you get a blog, you know, or two or whatever, right? And you get somebody who's doing your social media content. Holy heck, you can't buy that for $5,000 a month, $10,000 a month, $15,000 a month. It doesn't work that way. So there's this like multiple in terms of outsized return. Smart partner leaders right now are identifying that there are businesses that are ancillary, secondary, if you will, two-a-ways to their customer relationship that are doing the exact same thing. Different dynamic, perhaps. Maybe it's not MarTech or whatever. That's fine. But they are system integrators. They are agencies. They are service providers that are doing this work. And so if you go to that business and say, sell my software, you know, sell my services, they're not super excited about it. What HubSpot did is they said, we'll help you to package, price, and sell our software to your customers, teach you how to deliver inbound marketing services at the time on top of the software, and it's going to improve your efficiency, drastically increase your ROI, and help you be both more profitable and able to deliver better value to your customer. I had a whole exercise that I ran 3 months into being there where I helped to redesign some of those go-to-market messages in that language and redesign the program in ways because we recognized that there was an inflection point. The industry wanted that. They wanted partnership, right? I'm saying that word that we've said 15 times today, but true partnership, not resell, not channel. And I think that at the core, if you look at the best ecosystems, the best programs right now, are the ones that recognize that if we actually do more than just call up our business and say, what are you going to sell this month? What are you going to service this month? And actually work with them to go to market through marketing, right? Go to market through better selling, through better servicing. We all win because again, the customer is at the nucleus of everything we do.
Yeah. You know, Barrett, you'll hear companies that say they're 100% channel. And to channel leaders, it's like, man, that sounds fantastic. I wish I was there. But sometimes when I peel back the onion, talking to these companies, it's not what you're describing. It is kind of, well, we run every deal through a partner, but it's more of a pass-through. There's no real value add to the customer. It's just a transaction. And I was chatting with Jay McBain and his talking about the future of channels and everything. And he's pointing out marketplaces have set the bar on resale. The value of that resale is like 3%, 1.5% for renewals. So that's not where the money is for the partner anymore, but it's also not where the value is for the customer.
No, I think it's actually in the expertise. So like I would be remiss if I didn't say the word or the phrase, whether, you know, AI is next, right? You have to say that at some point, every podcast right now, it makes you sound cool. But I think I was asked by the PartnerUp guys a while back, a different show, but they'd asked the question of like, how does AI impact agency? And the answer that I gave, I haven't thought about this in a while, but this has triggered it, is I think relative and relevant to today. We can talk about how like Jasper and ChatGPT and all these platforms, while they are fantastic, will replace somebody. Everyone's worried they're going to get replaced. I actually don't think that's true. I think we're a very long way off from any of these technologies, you know, functionally replacing a human being. I think they make human beings better. What's interesting though, and where the value lies in this intersection we're talking about, is that AI aside, technology empowers agencies, system integrators, these partners to better capture and scale their abilities, both in terms of functional tactical work. There's that, but that's kind of commoditized. But more specifically, their expertise, their vertical knowledge, their ability to do something that is just so differentiated, their creativity, their whatever those components are that they actually are marketing against, the things that they're delivering value on. If I think about any ecosystem, HubSpot, Salesforce, Amazon, whatever it is, right? Most of them have, and I think this is, I'll blame the bigs, the hyperscalers, the biggest out there. It's easier for them to decentralize, like you're describing. It's easier for them to say, well, we're partner-led. You mean you don't hire people because it's more cost-effective to build a place where you can just have other people do the work, right? That's like gig economy in some ways. I think if you go back to the roots of what partnership means and you're intentional around it, then we have to be more specific in the way that we differentiate partners and in the way that we think about aligning the customer to the partner. So what I specifically mean there is that if you take what's working and you say, oh, if we do more of X, we'll just get more dollars out, it's the wrong idea. If you say, if we do what's working, which is X, and this weird math problem I'm making, and you multiply it instead of just add to it, that gets interesting. So what if we took all the campaigns that we're having our sales team run right now, all the messaging and the language and the sequences and the email templates. And what if we packaged it up and we just gave it to our partners? Like, holy crap, how would that change their go-to-market? They become an extension of your business now? Okay, cool. Now we're solving one of the problems, which is like lead gen and awareness. And we all know that partners own your customers' trust way before you do. So, okay, cool. Maybe we're a little bit ahead of the game there. But what you have to then do is say, great, what's your feedback, partner ecosystem? What's working? What's not? And if you look at them as a true extension of your organization, and you actually more actively work together, then I think that's where you start to see the 1+1=3 equation start to emerge. Mutual outcomes, better success because we are transparently working together versus, hey, you just, can you go pull that lever and push that button over there? Because we don't want to hire somebody to do it.
Right. What is your partnering strategy now that you are a partner?
Yep. I think for us, it is first and foremost, and I won't speak for Sky Pete, my team, just brilliant guy, super helpful in how I think about this. So I don't want to steal his thunder by any means. I'm going to give him a shout out. We are intentional around looking for tools and businesses and opportunities where, and it really is like, there's no smoke in this. It really is about the customer being better. So we might partner with an organization because we realize that by doing so, the customer can do X or Y better. I mean, HubSpot's our core partnership, right? It's one of our biggest. So I can say, as an example, the technology is easy to use. The technology is really well streamlined, talks to itself very well. It's easy to manipulate, put data in, take data out. It's easy to connect other things to now, finally. It took some time to get there, but we can do that as well. These are all things that add value to our customer because we can be more effective in delivering outcomes for them and measuring those outcomes and proving tangible ROI versus what historically was the case is that it was this kind of like Frankenstack where we had to go and figure it all out. That's one example. From a future state partnerships perspective, it's thinking differently around not just technology partnerships, but go-to-market partnerships. Are there organizations that are in the market talking to our customers or future customers that we should be aware of? Are there communities, G2 Crowd, and even HubSpot's own directory, things like that where we can be more intentional around the way that we curate value, the way that we elevate ourselves as a thought leader and a, I think in many ways, an expert to those outcomes. That all comes back to how we are constantly, we're always doing this, how we're constantly thinking about the businesses that add more value, the relationships that add more value to our customer, and looking to figure out specifically with them two things. I mean, obviously, like what's in it for the customer, but also in some ways, what's in it for us? Like, does it make us better? Does it help us be better? Then sure, that's a really attractive partner versus, I mean, you can imagine, I'm head of sales, right? Senior director of revenue, my cool little title. Like that aside, I get pings all day long. Do you want to buy this thing? Do you want to sign up for this program? Do you want to? And none of them are like, hey, I understand that you're trying to figure out how to deliver more value to your customers. I talked to four of your customers. Here's what they said. Here's how we can solve that problem for you so that you can solve it for them. That, I mean, I would say yes to that in a heartbeat. That's what we're seeing.
Do you have anyone on your team or at New Breed who's responsible for partnerships, or are you not at that stage?
Pete Raymond. Yeah. Pete and my team, not on my team to be clear. He's part of my org. I should be clear. He works with my CRO specifically, but yeah. And that's his charter. That's what he does.
And do you view those as sales partners, services partners, technology partners, all the above?
All the above. They're all different. I mean, I think each of them have a different value. Where it's interesting is that there's always a new sales partner, right? There's always somebody who's like, hey, can you take our software and sell it? I can blame HubSpot openly on this show with you. Like, it's their fault because they did a good job. Like, they made it work, right? They figured out that agencies would, because the technology was so by proximity close to the problem, would adopt HubSpot quickly, become their evangelism arm, you know, go to market for them. We market for HubSpot, right? We also sell for HubSpot. We service for HubSpot, all those different things. I don't mind the sales relationships because I think as long as they're adding value, it's beneficial. But the ones that I'm quicker, the ones that we are quicker to certainly engage with, from my observations, I would say, so call it just my opinion in that sense, are the ones that know our customer better, as well as we do certainly, or better than us in a perfect situation, because then it becomes interesting, right? Then it's value add versus, you know, the pie is only so big. I can't cut it up at some point anymore.
Well, we're trying to make it bigger. That's our goal.
Trying. Bigger pies for everyone. That's our new chant. That's our hashtag for this episode. Bigger pies for all.
Hashtag bigger pie, more pie. Hey, what's your take on the nearbound strategy?
I think nearbound is natural. I think nearbound is like realistic. It's not so dissimilar from some of the stuff that Jay talked about early on. We talked about Jay McBain earlier. I think nearbound represents the logical evolution. If I tell this sort of like story quickly for edification purposes. So, you know, early on it was traditional billboards, radio, and door-to-door salespeople. It was like very intrusive. It was go out. But a lot of that was because media had not advanced to the stage of how intimate it is today, right? Then it was inbound, which was like, what if we could put out content to answer our customers' questions when they have them, be a resource, be a thought leader, we would attract them to us. That worked for 7 to 10 years. Then it was targeted outbound through enriched content, and then you add a sales layer. And to be clear, sales was always present through all of this, but sales. And then somewhere in the last 3 to 5 years, people figured out that none of that stuff was helpful. Like, when was the last time you downloaded a white paper? You haven't. I guarantee you haven't. I'll speak for you.
Or to your point, responded to an email.
Ever. Yeah. Like we all have, I bet you everyone would laugh when I say it. We all have that email that we use to sign up for those offer things. It's like our crap email. I have a Yahoo that I haven't, you know, ever sent an actual email to. It's literally just to sign up for stuff that I'll never look at. Right. So it stopped working and people went, oh crap, what are we going to do? And you started to look at the market and say, and I got to give like Brian Halligan and Dharmesh over at HubSpot credit for this. They talked about flywheel, which is like, well, your customers are talking about you to other potential customers. How do we make them evangelists? That was sort of like the incremental step. And the next step being nearbound, and the idea being that we can curate communities of knowledge and of support and of, you know, many ways like value and share that value around. It can be about a rising tides methodology. So my perspective, it is the, maybe in some ways, the most human version of selling and of servicing and of, you know, the evolution, if you will, of go-to-market that I've experienced in my generation, just under 40, if that helps from an age perspective.
So this is kind of interesting where you're at now. If I'm at HubSpot, I'm thinking of a nearbound strategy where I want to make sure that the customer's trusted advisors are saying positive things about me, right? And you're one of those HubSpot trusted advisors to the customer. So you being kind of on the receiving end, if I can phrase this question well, you're now on the receiving end of everything from HubSpot that impacts you as their influencer to the market. What are things that they can do? And I'm thinking, okay, what can vendors do to help their partners be better influencers in that nearbound strategy?
So I won't use the word HubSpot in my answer. I will just say, generally speaking, vendors could do quite a few things actually. Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with listening. I made that comment, I think, earlier in the show, but it starts with listening. I'll say HubSpot. HubSpot does this, Salesforce does this, Amazon does, they all do this, which is technology partners believe that they, I'm generalizing to be clear, not everybody at these partners, these vendors actually believe this, but I'd say generally speaking, my experience, I think there is an assumption that the vendor knows best sometimes. I disagree. I don't think the vendor or the partner know best. The customer knows best. And when I think about what nearbound represents, it's an opportunity to listen to the market more. I'm a big listener, obviously. I said it a couple of times today because I think the market will tell you what you need to do. And my experience and perception is that the market right now is saying from vendors to partners, we need assets, we need education, and we need a more cohesive go-to-market. I've talked to folks at Amazon. I have friends at Facebook. I've talked to like the bigs, right? And all of them are like, well, how do we get more partner engagement, right? Like that, what's that expression? 80% of your revenue comes from your top 20%. It's actually less now. I saw a stat that was like 10% or something obnoxious. I mean, it's sad, right? I think that comes from not thinking about collective go-to-market, not thinking about the sharing of assets and value and resources and keeping this like somewhat distanced adversarial dynamic instead of being hyper-intentional about bringing together both sales teams, bringing together both services teams, the togetherness, the better together, right? To use a classic statement, is in many ways, I think, what's lacking. So if you look at the vendor dynamic, they could be more intentional around building resource libraries, sure, right? Knowledge base, that's table stakes. But I'd say a more cohesive go-to-market. If you're strategizing for next year, bring your top partners in. You should. You should talk together about that. If you don't have an executive sponsor meeting with each of your top, you know, maybe 15 or 20% partners every month, that's a miss. If you're trying to run your software company in a silo like that, an absolute miss, because your partners are on the front lines with your customers every day. And with all due respect to every CS person that listens to this, you only know one dimension of the problem. I was at HubSpot for 8.5 years. Like, I sold a whole bunch of HubSpot. I helped my services counterparts, you know, do a ton of work. I thought I knew everything. I didn't know anything. Because we weren't asking, I wasn't specifically, I was a lowly, you know, low on the totem pole, right? I'll put that out there. But as a rep, I wasn't asking my partners to truly deeply understand that problem until maybe 2 years into my 5 years doing that work before I realized, like, whoa, there's something here. What are they doing that I could be doing better? How can I learn from them? So synthesize it up, wrap it up with a bow, land the plane, all those fun expressions. We got to get better as vendors at listening to the market, listening to our customers, our partners, being intentional in that way, going to market together with intent. So a lot of it is reactive. Let's be proactive. How are we planning this year? Sign an NDA. Let's go share it. Let's go, right? How are you planning? Go to the partners. How are you planning? What are you thinking about? Let's work on that collaborative. Let's challenge. Let's enable each other to be better. I think if you bring those components together and then you make a customer come in and tell you if you're crazy or not, you're actually going to have a better outcome. You're going to sell more service better. You're going to have a better customer dynamic in the market. And that's where Nearbound starts to really work.
Yeah, you nailed it, Barrett. I'm interviewing our sales reps right now who I will bring up on stage at our kickoff in a couple of weeks. These are our top sellers. And I'm asking them, you know, what is helping you be successful? And it's that attitude that you're describing, you know, reaching out and building really intentional partnerships, going together to the customer. Like you said, it's so easy as a vendor to get wrapped in your own little cocoon of, it's our world, you know.
Yeah, we know everything.
We know everything.
High castle, all that good stuff. Yeah.
And the reps that struggle are the ones that have that mentality that I know everything, I don't need them, you know, but you're not right.
It's transactional. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's so transactional, which is, that's 10 years ago. That's old school sales. That's old school marketing, right? They're going to download an ebook and they're going to convert and be a lead. No, they're not. They're going to spend 8 months looking at different assets to decide if you're a good resource. Like, it is such a more involved process. And I can blame Zuckerberg on this. We're going to talk about Zuckerberg. I'll blame Mark. It's totally his fault because he gave us access to way too much information way too fast. And he was a catalyst for it, right?
Yeah, we weren't ready for it.
Yeah, like I'm going to bleep out this section. Don't get Mark involved. No, I mean, look, I think big media, it's a soapbox, forgive me. I think big media has given us all so much access to so much information so quickly that our brains, our minds, our bodies can't consume it all. So as much as we are, perhaps from a tactical perspective, stuck in this old school ideology, we are moving faster than we ever have. So how do you cut through the noise? I might take my phone out and I'm actually not a social media guy anymore. Thankfully, I've been pushing away from it. But like, okay, where do I go? If I look for a product review, you know where I go? I go to Reddit. I Google the product. I put in the word review and I put Reddit right afterwards. I'm not a Reddit user. I don't ever comment, but you better believe there's 400 people with a big old opinion on there. And like, I'll read all the comments and I'll form my own opinion afterwards, but I'm going to get some insight there. Or I'm going to go to their website and I'm going to sort by the worst reviews first because I want to know what's not working. That's how I operate, right? I want to know what sucks about it, what you hate about it. And if I can look at that and go, nah, that's one off, or oh, it doesn't sound really good, or you know, whatever, fine, I'll move past it. It's the people that we should be listening to. And I think ultimately to your point, when you start to listen to your prospects, to the market, to buyers, that gets really interesting.
Yeah, that's where it's powerful. And I think that's the crux of it. That's how you go from 1+1=2 to 3 or more. When you bring that, all of that to the equation.
Change the dynamic, 1,000%.
Absolutely. Would you say partnering is a sales strategy at New Breed, or is it becoming a business strategy?
I think it was always a business strategy. One of the outputs of that is sales. One of the outputs of that is better service. I think fortunately, I believe this, our CEO, Patrick, and Dana, co-founder, Taylor, co-founder, there's a crew of them, our founders, were smart enough to recognize that being attached to something like what was a growing opportunity with HubSpot made sense to be able to scale their business effectively and, you know, in many ways, obviously benefit from the reach that HubSpot was generating. But it's always been about better holistic business value than ever about sales proximity. We could have gone to Salesforce. We could still go to Salesforce, right? We could have gone to Amazon. We could still go to Amazon. Those things are all fine. there's something about mutual values. So I would say it's in part a business decision, absolutely, and business centric, but it's also about mutual values. How do we care about the customer together? How do we care about our team members together? Do we share? Do we have a culture of better together, right? Classic statement, but better together. Because if we do, then we're going to have better outcomes. If we don't, then it really is transactional, like you're asking, right? And it's just sales, just service, just whatever.
All right. Fantastic. Barrett, great conversation. Let's jump to your channel journey or partner journey. I always like talking about, and I heard you talk about this on one of the shows that you were on. You know, I come out of most of us, we didn't know where our Legos were stacked. I came out of a petroleum engineering degree working on the rigs. You actually worked in a restaurant, was one of your early gigs, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I graduated college in 2008. I'm dating myself, and had a design degree, digital arts and design, which was kind of trendy and cool. And it was web and 3D and print and motion graphics. And immediately was like, yep, not doing that with my life. I don't know why I spent the energy and time. I think I liked the creativity of it, but it was 2008. So the economy had just started to implode. No one knew, obviously, the leading indicators, but
the whole financial crisis then.
Oh, so bad. Yeah. And I was like fresh out of college. What do I know? No jobs. So I went and had dinner with my aunt in the seaport of Boston at a cool restaurant. I hadn't done that before. I was like fresh out of college, right? I ate at like, you know, crappy local restaurants. I went to this like super awesome spot she took me to. And afterwards I walked up to the GM and I was like, man, this was really great. And I love this. And I described my experience and she just looked at me and she went, do you want a job? And I said, what? And she's like, if you come in tomorrow, I'll make you my head of hospitality. You can host during the day and you can help me book parties at night. And like, do you just want to work here? You just did exactly what I want you to do as that role. And I was, yeah, I do. I want to do that. And so I did. I did restaurants for, that was like 3 years, the first stint. I got out, worked in tech for about a year. And then 2010, layoffs again. And I got laid off. So that was a housing crisis and all that. I went back into restaurants. So I left tech. I went back into restaurants for a few years. I think it was about two. Opened a restaurant, managed a restaurant, you know, GM and such. And then found my way into an early stage tech startup that was selling to restaurants. So I did a proximity jump. That's how I describe it. Like, use my experience, go somewhere. They fired the VP of sales, fun fact, 2 months into me being there, and said, you sold more in 2 months he has in 2 years. You get the job, but you've got 60 days to prove your value again. Good luck. I'll see you in 60 days. So I did that for almost 2 years. Every 60 days, I walk in the CEO's office and you go, yeah, you did enough. You have your job. Keep going. It was mental.
You're still employed.
Yeah, it was so bad. Not healthy. And then we were acquired and I found myself at a crossroads of what I want to do next. And I had somebody, a buddy of mine who was at HubSpot, who was like, man, you should come here. I'm like, nope, no chance. There are 450 people. That's too big. No one knew what HubSpot was. It wasn't even a thing. And well, in my circles. And so he's like, no, come in for an informational interview. And I got to give a shout out to Brad Coffee. I'm not sure you'll ever hear this, but if you do, you changed my life. So thank you. Brad was I think he was chief innovation officer or head of innovation or something, some really awesome title. Brilliant human being. One of those people that you're in a room with, you're just like both intimidated by and enamored by. And he spent 45 minutes with me sitting in the atrium, their kind of like big open space in the middle, talking about how HubSpot existed in the market, what HubSpot did, and then was like, and this is how we help our agencies go to market and help our customers grow better. And he talked all about the partner program. I remember sitting there being like, whatever that was, I need to be a part of that. And so I left the office. I walked two blocks. I waited for and got on the Green Line. Green Line left the station. It went one stop. And I had a DM on LinkedIn from the director, Brian Thorne, shout out to you, who said, whatever you just said to Brad, come tell me about it at 3 o'clock today. Can you come back for a formal interview? This is like 11 in the morning. And I'm like, yeah, I'm there. I'll see you in a couple hours. I went home, changed, put on better clothes, and came back 9 interviews later in a final presentation where the CEO sat in and tortured me in a good way, just question after question. I got the job. That was the start of my journey. And I came in at a time when the business was doing well, but was probably looking for a pivot. I can look back and say that now. And I acquired more partners in that instance than a lot of folks had in their first year. Because of what I described to you earlier, which was I made it about better together stories, I made it about better value for the customer, better value for the agency, helping them to grow better. Because I believed this story I had been sold on. Right? I'm going to go and change these people's lives. Let's go, you know, boil the ocean kind of thing. And it cascaded from there. First head of sales training, leading partner, learned a ton about how to teach people, educate people, and learned a lot deeply about agencies at that point through research, through conversations. And then I ran that for a couple of years and then moved back over to the partner manager role, channel account manager, they called it, and managed New Breed, actually, the company I work for now, and a few other top partners, and did that for a few years and just helped them to sell and grow. And incredible stories of, like, you know, New Breed was 25 people when I started working with them in 17 or so, and grew to like 130 super fast. You know, three, four years we were there, like really experienced what it felt like to be a part of that journey from a vendor perspective, but also I was close to these partners. I cared about them. Modern Driven Media, my favorite story, Shayna Stagerwalt, she's in Philadelphia. I bet you she hears this. favorite human being, but favorite story. Shayna was young in her career, figuring out what she wanted to do at a little agency that she was trying to grow up. And we worked together just over and over and over again, countless hours and days and, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, and took her to, you know, multi-million dollar agency in a matter of a few years. Tons of hard work on her end, but like, I got to be a part of that. That was what really just anchored me in partnerships, watching these companies grow better because they were a part of our program. And then I jumped out. I went into corporate to bring partners to the upmarket space that HubSpot was trying to explore. And then I ended in go-to-market, really learning about how partnerships could impact business at scale. I thought I knew, right? Because I had been in the roles and I'd been a part of it. And when I was leading training, I had proximity and I had perspective. But I ended my partner journey in terms of core role at HubSpot in global go-to-market strategy, helping us determine at the time, HubSpot at the time, determine a acquisition, onboarding, activation strategy globally. So like really interesting pathway. And then to your point, decided it was time to learn the other side of the coin. And now I'm at the North American Partner of the Year for 3 years running. Like, it's a really cool journey to experience.
That's a great journey. Very, very fun. You know, as I was listening to you, I was thinking about my kind of special moments in the channel. You know, I remember my first channel job was in Boston, working for a little software company. And they hired me. I convinced them to hire me as international channel sales manager, and had a great time. One of my highlights, we put together an international partner meeting in Paris. And I remember going to a little Paris cafe before the meeting, I guess, sitting with my partner from Brazil. And he was laying out with me and we were strategizing how we were going to win the biggest deal of the year for the company in Brazil.
Yep. I love it. Those are the, like, that's the in the trenches stuff. Those are the stories that we tell, because I think what's unique about partnerships is it's not linear. I think the guys and gals that are working in partnerships understand that this is this sort of like web of interaction. It's like our hands and our fingers and our toes and everything are everywhere at all times. And it's a lot of spinning plates is the analogy I've heard. Like, how many plates can you spin at the same time? The best partnerships people spin all the plates and don't let them drop. Super hard, but to your point, it's dynamic, it's unique, it's interesting, and you have these great stories because of it.
Yeah, that is our job every day, spinning a lot of different plates. Fantastic. How about outside of work? What do you love to do?
What I love to do, I think I told you before we hit record, I recently lost about 30, 35 pounds through fitness. I just fell back in love with the idea of taking care of myself. So I haven't drank or, you know, ate like shit, frankly, in probably 18 months or so at this point, which I've been really proud of. I run 6-7 days a week. I lift weights and I've really transformed myself back to where I feel really good, which has allowed me to do with a lot of the other things that I like. I mountain bike, I ski and snowboard. I live in New England, so that's sort of a natural thing. I really enjoy photography. So I've got a 5-year-old, yeah, and I'm chasing him constantly with the camera, but I like landscape photography and doing things out in the world in that sense. And then just, I like anything with a motor, to be honest with you. I enjoy, you know, really nice cars and really nice motorcycles. I have a hobby there that probably is more expensive than it should be, but I enjoy that too. So I'm competitive. I like things that are competitive, but I also enjoy the other side of it, the beauty and the art that is in the world around us. So I find things in that space too.
A lot of different passions. That's great.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Excellent. Barrett, thank you so much. This has been a fun conversation. Really enjoyed it. And congratulations again on your podcast. Everybody go out and listen to Outcomes. It's fantastic.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate you being a friend and fan in that sense. It's been a great conversation. I really, really enjoyed this. My pleasure for coming on. So thanks again for having me.
All right. Excellent. Have a great year.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks for listening to Channel Journeys. For show notes and other Channel Journey podcasts, visit channeljourneys.com. If you liked today's show, please forward it to your channel friends and be sure to tune in for Rob's next channel adventure.
There you go, guys. A lot of great advice from Barrett and a very positive way to think about partnering and building what he calls the value triangle. It starts by really listening to your customers, listening to your partners. Thank you for listening to today's show. Thank you, Barrett, for an engaging conversation. For all of today's show notes and links, go to channeljourneys.com/CJ138. You can subscribe to Channel Journeys while you're there so you don't miss an episode. Be sure to check out our sponsor, Impartner, at impartner.com. And if you're looking for more channel knowledge, check out Barrett's podcast, Outcomes, where partnerships and SaaS meet. Next episode, I've got another channel podcaster as my guest. We'll be talking about what's new in partner ecosystem marketing. Until then, have an awesome channel journey.